tell me this. If somebody wanted to end Gordon Hayward's career before it started, they would go talk to the equipment manager, and instead of giving him the education reform jersey, which apparently was the back door for every white dude, you know, outside of like peace and equality, what if they had given him the love us jersey?
Oh. Welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Dan Levitard. That's Bomani Jones and Dominique Foxworth. Let's get started.
Is it a big deal that Pac-12 football players are threatening to boycott?
Such a big deal that Bomani Jones is out here writing and reporting and doing journalism. Pac-12, check it out, the undefeated, because he's actually done the legwork to talk about what this movement means, where it comes from. So you should check that out. I've always maintained that the only way for the powerless to get power in this particular workplace is to do something like sit out before a national championship game as a team or a Final Four, cost television dollars, cost the school money. This is kind of the next best thing. The Pac-12 is sort of realizing that the powerless are not exactly powerless right now. The powerless actually have some leverage. If you want to put these bodies in harm's way more than you already do, and they're young people, you're going to have to literally pay for it. This is not extortion, but it is a bit of a threat, and it is a threat that comes with leverage.
Here's what happened, and I think this is the most important thing for people to keep in mind. COVID laid bare what the game was. It gave the game away. If they were willing to put players and coaches in harm's way in order to try to get this money, it made it clear just how important the players actually were, because they are seeing the level of desperation they're having to have a football season. When you hear people respond to this and say, fine, leave, we just won't play football, clearly the schools don't feel that way because they're willing to move hell and everything else in order to try to have a football season. So that's where we are. Now, is this a big deal? It's a big deal in the sense that what I think has happened is an awakening across the country of college football players. Do not be surprised if you hear about players in other conferences trying to come up with something else that is similar. One of the players made a very good point to me, though, that I was not able to put into the piece. He's like, this isn't about the mechanics right now. And that's a crucial point to make, because even if you think that some of the demands they make have no chance of getting started, the big thing is they are making a connection between racial justice, what's happening with health and safety, and with the economics. When you put all of those things together and crystallize those into issues, they're easily relatable to a lot of college football players. And I do think that this is the beginning of something having to change with college football, because as we've seen with Washington State, some coach is going to be willing to embarrass himself to try to maintain order. And if more guys are found out to do things like that, the sentiment of this is going to swing into toward the players in a way that I don't think people could have expected before this happened.
I sure hope so, because I think the public sentiment is going to be important for something like this, because anytime you're trying to make these type of large institutional changes, it requires a commitment from people that you tend to not see from a class that only exists for 4 to 5 years. If you think about it, when you first get to school, most people are happy to be there. Then some people separate themselves, and then their only goal for the next 2 years is to get to the next level. And the rest of the people there do not have much power. It'll be interesting to see what athletes are going to be willing to cross that line, knowing that this is their entire career and it is a decrease of their opportunities to have a career afterwards. That's a real large commitment to expect from a group of people who are so young and will only be there for such a short period of time.
Well, let me tell you something else that was interesting to come across in talking to players. I talked to players from four schools to write that story. Now, one of those schools is a player from Washington State. We see how that coach has reacted, but the coaches from the other three schools, they've listened to the players, and the players have been surprised. They told me that they didn't feel like, they're like, look, we know coaches are getting wind of what it is that we're doing, but they didn't have a situation where they felt like the coaches are trying to tamp this down before it started. And part of why they think so, and I think that this is an interesting point to consider, in a way, their fight also benefits the coaches in the sense that the coaches have no idea what's going on with COVID-19 either. The coaches are also worried about what their health is going to be like. The difference is, those guys make a boatload of money, so they're more likely to go and show up. It is entirely possible that if health and safety protections come for the players, this could also wind up benefiting those millionaire coaches who, in a very ironic way, don't really have the place to say anything about being unsure or being frightened about what's going on, because they got to A, look responsible, and B, nobody wants to hear from them because they make a lot of money. So as these unpaid players do this for themselves, it's worth considering that if they get some of the things they want, they'll also be doing it for the coaches.
One of the things I've found interesting about the last couple of months is I do believe that corporations or public sentiment, that there's a bit of flailing going on with all of this symbol removal. Take John Wayne's name off the airport, Aunt Jemima off the bottle. It's because we feel a little bit helpless and it makes us feel better to do something. This isn't symbolic, what's happening here. Here is the system. It's being attacked now from inside by people who have power. We will not get change on many of the things happening in our streets for 10 or 20 years, but this is a start point on actually getting at the system being unjust with the people who have never had the power before actually having power.
And understand this, the most important thing for these players, and this is a point that they told me they wanted to make clear, what's more important than anything else to them in this is racial justice. There's actually some dissension about the compensation issues, but once some guys were made to understand that the compensation was tied to racial justice, they came around on it. But the big thing for them is racial justice. The symbolism is not going far enough for them. They want this organization to stop exploiting Black communities, removing talent from them, making money off of it, and then not giving anything back to them. Race is at the center of this, and that's from Black players and white players too.
I mean, that's so interesting because I think that race being the center of this is undeniable and it's something that will motivate a segment of society to be in support of this. But it's also the reason, I believe, why a certain other segment of society can't seem to get behind what seems to be so obviously unjust.
Yeah, why are these people even mad, right? Like, you see these folks that are in there, they're like, fine, well, if you don't want this, then you can just walk away. This is not even your money. Like, how empty of a soul do you have to be mad because some 20-year-olds got more heart than you do? Like, that's all that's telling me right there when people say that is, you look and see some people that are demonstrating some heart and showing more courage than most of us ever would, and it make you feel sorry inside. And you know why? Because inside you sorry.
Oh.
Sorry is my favorite insult that you could use on people, right? Because it's so non-profane, but you're just sorry.
Oh, man, that was used on the basketball courts in the 90s yes. quite often, I remember.
You sorry.
You're sorry. Oh, y'all gonna stick us with him? He's sorry.
Sorry. And we don't use sorry. Like, we don't describe anything as sorry other than no. I'm, right?
That is true. Like all other insults, you could be used for many other nouns, but sorry, it's just like.
I think they're going to put all of this in there. I hope so.
Sorry.
Should Odell Beckham's comments give the NFL pause about moving forward with the season?
All right, this is a Wall Street Journal story, and it is really rare for this to be quite so overt, where we're putting price tags and values on health and bodies in a way that's almost literal. So Odell Beckham is sitting here saying, this doesn't make sense that we're trying to come back, but it doesn't make sense. It makes dollars. That's what's happening here at every turn in football throughout sports. And what I find interesting about this particular discussion is he's absolutely right. There's nothing in it for him. He's got his money. He doesn't have to put his health any more on the line or his body any more on the line. But you saw the disconnect in the collective bargaining agreement where the guys who didn't have their money did want the deal. And the guys who already had their money were saying this is a stupid deal. So Odell Beckham, coming from the position of privilege in that sport, he's telling you we shouldn't be playing. He's not wrong, but he can afford it. A lot of guys can't.
Wow. So first of all, I'm still hung up on that great wordplay. It doesn't make sense, but it makes dollars. You must be a writer, Dan. That was spectacular. I loved it. But I mean, I don't think that what Odell is saying should give the NFL pause. I think the facts that existed before he started saying it should have given the NFL pause. Just hearing Odell say it doesn't matter. He is making more sense than a lot of them in this situation. But you're right. It is all about the money at this point. Odell recognizes that. Many of the players recognize that. And the league recognizes it. They're not going to pretend like it's not something more than that. But I'm not sure what happened between the time when Odell said that and the time when he reported to camp. I guess maybe they gave some more health and safety precautions, but if Odell felt that strongly, and I don't mean to put it this way, I'm not so sure that he should be there right now. If he is as concerned as he says he is, and he should be that concerned. So I'm not trying to make it seem like he's just full of it. Maybe there's some misplaced commitment to his team that has him showing up there, but this is a high-risk situation. And if you have made the money that Odell has made, I could understand not showing up, and I would probably encourage a lot of guys not to show up. If you haven't made that money, I understand completely why you would feel like it's worth the risk of your lifetime's worth of commitment. This last year is not going to be, and the coronavirus is not going to be the reason why you don't reach that goal, that financial goal that's going to change the trajectory of your family's life going forward. But for Odell Beckham, he already got that money, so I'm not sure why he's there.
Look, man, we got to make a very important distinction. These guys that are going there to get that money aren't really going just to get the money. They're going because they got bills to pay, right? Like, if it was just simply about getting the money, I think a lot more people would stay home, and I think the NFL would not be having a season. But the reason we saw the NBA do all the stuff they did to get that bubble going, they had bills to pay. They owed this money to other people, and that's where a lot of people stand on this. They got people counting on them at home. They got people counting on them all kinds of places, and so they're going to go out here, and they're going to do what they have to get this bread, and the NFL plays on this with the players on just about every single level and in every negotiation that they wind up having. Should this give them pause? I'm with Dominique. All the other stuff should give them pause. They ain't here for about no pause. Like, let's stop and ask ourselves this question. Given what we're seeing in baseball, how many teams in baseball are even still playing right now, right? They still haven't shut this down. I literally have no idea what the line will be where the NFL is like, nah, man, we just can't do this. Like, how many teams are going to have to be out of commission? What star is going to have to get sick? What terrible illness is going to have to befall someone to make the NFL say, no, we're not going to go out here and do this? I literally have no idea. And I know this because no matter what they put out there on the field, we're going to send the cameras and y'all are about to watch.
Hold up, Dan. Hold up, Dan. So, no, nothing will give them pause. All they want to do is press play.
I like that.
Coming up next on my Soul Stevie show.
Oh, this was against the Heat right here. What do we have here?
Oh, this is bananas. Look
what?
At this. Look at this.
Highly Questionable is presented by Corona Extra. Find your beach. And in part by Lexus. Experience amazing. Do you question if James Harden got Giannis back?
All right, so the MVPs have been going back and forth. Giannis dismisses Harden with the really disrespectful, calling him the dribbler. And then for the All-Star game, he says he doesn't want anybody who doesn't play defense. So they're playing yesterday, and Houston's got a couple of comebacks in this bubble that are a little scary, where they were down a lot late, and they came back. And so yesterday, you've got Giannis boxing out Harden on this play. Harden not going out of after that with a whole lot of vigor there. I don't think that's getting. All right, let's see what else we have here, because at the end of the game, this is the only question any of us have about the Bucks. You can't let Harden guard you late.
Oh, quick hands. This was the worst one. This was the worst one.
Look at James Harden.
The clamps.
Kevin McHale tells these great stories about James Harden in the film room as a vanishing defensive man. You cannot allow James Harden to do that to you, but these questions are going to persist until Giannis makes him evaporate in the postseason, because we all saw and we all remember what Kawhi did to him when he was guarding him, and James Harden is not Kawhi.
Yeah, but they both have something in common. They're both really, really strong, right? Like, that's the one thing about James Harden. You don't realize that dude's like 225, 230. He is a tank. And where Giannis has problems with dudes is if he can't just duck that shoulder on you, then he's got an issue. If you're quick enough to kind of stay in front of him, but strong enough to stay there when he hits you, that's why Miami has such a great chance against him with Jimmy and with Bam Adebayo, because they got a couple of those guys that might be able to do it. So let's give James Harden a little credit for what he is good at, which is being big.
I mean, my takeaway from that game was how flustered that micro ball seems to continue to make some teams. It may not work in the long run. However, in those situations, they were running their offense in certain times through one of the Lopez's. They were passing it through him on a block and he was missing shots and they look all out of sorts. And then they would put him in for the last sequence. Then they take the Lopez out for the last sequence. It just seems like whatever Houston is doing, they seem comfortable doing it, and their opponents rarely seem as comfortable as they do.
Yo, and they resurrected Russell Westbrook. I thought he was finished, and I'm not the only person who thought he was finished. I thought it was going to be one of those quick declines because so much of what he did was based off athleticism. That dude has been unstoppable before the shutdown, and he just picked right back up.
I got to tell you, though, we make fun of the Rockets, and James Harden has that postseason reputation, but it can't be argued that there's a more inventive team in the league in terms of noticing, hey, what we had before wasn't good enough. Let's totally shake this thing up.
Shout out to Clint Capella, by the way. It wasn't your fault. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing about it. Like, if you're 7 feet tall, people think that you a freak unless you a good basketball player, right? Then he winds up on the Rockets. He's 7 feet tall, and they wouldn't let him be a basketball player because they were like, nah, we can get somebody 6'5 to right. do your job. I mean, that would feel like discrimination if I was him. I would call a lawyer. Like, y'all got to have some equal representation out here.
Do you question if Bol Bol should play point guard?
All right. Are any of you uncomfortable with how quickly this basketball game is evolving? Like, it's changed a lot in terms of physically what's doing what out there. So you've got this physical freak by any measure, Bol Bol. He shouldn't at any time in history be able to do any of that because of how big he is. It's just strange. Bomani, you're old enough to remember Manute Bol. Like, that's not how he played.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. And like, if his father were here to see it, can you imagine how shocked he would be by this? He couldn't do any of this stuff.
That's ridiculous. Like, that's absurd. I
mean, to be fair, Manute Bol didn't pick up basketball until late in his life, and he did have that one game where he hit 6 threes and a half. So, I mean, he had a little perimeter game, right? No?
This right here, like, Ralph Sampson in the mid-'80s was a 7'4" power forward, in effect. It was way ahead of the game, but he couldn't do any of that stuff, right? None of that dribbling the ball, crossing over people. Like, it is a little bit frightening now that you mention it. So, like, Bol Bol should come with a warning label.
Can you guys put on the screen Charles Barkley's just epic disgust at having to fetch a basketball out of a basket because Manute Bol shot it into a basket from a great distance? There is some great video of just Charles under the basket being like, come on, get out of here. Come on, not from out there.
He had one more play this weekend, though. I think one more crazy play. This was the one that really got my attention.
Oh, this was against the Heat right here. What do we have here?
Oh, this is bananas. Look
what?
At this. Look at this. That's like. Look, I know why he went in the second round, because there were real concerns about his body. But come on, man. Somebody had to roll the dice on this earlier, right?
Guys, help me out here, by the way, because the social justice jerseys. Was that a Plumlee who dunked it at the end? Because it said peace it on the back of the jersey.
It was.
And
it,
I don't
it,
know
it,
who
it,
that was.
No, it was a Plumlee, and I do have to say this. As much as some of these dudes want to make these statements to the world, you know, about whatever their causes are, it has not made it that easy to watch some of these games, because I realize I don't know who a lot of y'all are without a name on your back. Jermichael Green, I've asked who was that 5 times. I watched Clippers play 3 games, 5 times. I've been like, who is that? And the answer was always Jermichael Green, a.k.a. I don't know what he had on the back of his. Ujamaa, I'm not sure.
Do you question if this tomato looks like Larry Bird?
All right. For many years on our radio show, we have been talking about the fact that Larry Bird looks like an old Ukrainian woman wearing a headscarf. You tell me if this tomato looks like an old Ukrainian woman.
That's Larry Bird.
That's an unhappy, droopy-lipped Larry Bird. But
what
it
other
did
kind
look
of
like
Larry
him.
Bird is there? When have you ever seen Larry Bird smile? Like, that's the one thing about it, man. Larry Bird at once does not have lips and does not smile, which means he looked like that tomato all the time.
I mean, the tomato does look exactly like him, though.
Can I look at that tomato again? Because it's also like the same nose.
Hey guys, did you know that Larry Bird was also a line judge at Wimbledon?
Oh, this is a highly questionable classic right here.
Oh, yes, Larry Bird.
There you go. Yes, the greatest basketball player in the 80s across a couple of seasons.
Same haircut.
Highly Questionable, presented by Corona Extra. Find your beach. Tonight at 9:10 p.m., Dodgers and Padres.
All right, Mookie Betts can do a lot of different things on a baseball field well, but I did not know that he had this particular throw in his arsenal, because this is not a throw you very often see made by anyone in the history of the sport, really. You know, who are you talking about? Jesse Barfield, biggest arms.
Like Mark Whitten. Oh my God.
Right there. Yeah. See, that, not a lot of human beings can do that in the history of the sport. Clemente, like, let's look at that again because the accuracy of that is also ridiculous.
Yeah, with that short windup, that is bananas.
Yes. Dominique, are you intrigued?
Absolutely. So much of baseball is hard to appreciate how difficult it is. Like hitting the ball is very tough and you can just look at it and just you take it for granted because it happens so often. But throws like that, no matter how often they happen, they always give me pause.
Bomani, who's the biggest arm you've seen? Dave Winfield, Ellis Valentine. Who's the biggest right field arm you've seen?
All right, so we got like Mark Whitten, Ichiro Suzuki. Like these are the dudes that we throw on that list. I didn't know Mookie Betts had it like that on that throw. And a reminder, the most exciting plays in baseball happen at third base. It just so happens that the least likely plays in baseball are at third base. We just got like everybody's 18. Always trying to skip over third base.
Yeah, they are averaging 18 strikeouts a game right now. Nobody's getting to third base except they're trotting past it. If you want more Dominique Foxworth, The Undefeated is where you can find him. Also on Get Up and First Take. He's overexposed, actually. Bomani Jones has something for you to read, Pac-12 related. He did some reporting. Check it out, The Undefeated. We were playing a softball game with Ricky Williams where he just enjoyed doing that to people. So he was in the outfield and you could hear the sound of a softball, okay, coming in toward third base because of the low trajectory of it. And you just heard people go, good God, as soon as it left his hand.